Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 10 o'clock. Going to let you hear from Connor Riley in just a second. But before that, Oren, I was thinking about something. And it hit me in the head today because of something that we're doing at the station later this week. If I asked you this question, who are the athletes that other athletes revere the most? What would be your answer?
From a certain sport or just in the names of them?
From a sport. Like other athletes, like would it be football players because it's really physical? Same thing for hockey. Would it be baseball players because hitting a fastball is the hardest thing to do in professional sports? Would it be soccer because it's the world's global game? Would it be tennis because of how hard it is to be dominant in tennis? What athlete do you think athletes revere the most?
I think it's football players because I, from a size and speed and strength scale, I think those are the best athletes in the world.
I disagree. You know what I think it is? And it's actually not particularly close. And the reason I was thinking about this is because it's one of the best weeks of the year. It's Eastlake. I think it's golfers.
Really?
Every athlete wants to be a golfer.
Yeah, I can see that. They just
every single athlete, whether it's
or they just want to be really, really good at golf.
They want to be really good at golf. And it's something I didn't realize until I moved here to Georgia. Because we didn't really cover golf in the Northeast. It's just not as big. Certain talk show hosts love it, and they'll carve time out of their shows to talk about it. But it's not like here. And I didn't realize the influence of golf on every single sport. Men's, women's, racing, tennis, team sports, doesn't matter. Everybody wants to be good at golf. It is, Oren, I'm going to use this word, non-discriminatory. It applies to everybody. Everybody wants to be good at golf. And it's crazy because it's like, yeah, Eastlake is this week and we're all going to be out there, 92 on the game, come say hi. If you're going to be there, Tito Stillhouse and all the rest. Everybody wants to be good at golf. It doesn't matter if you're a football player. What did Pitts and Neusel and everybody talk about this offseason?
Learn how to play golf this offseason.
Learn how to play golf. Major League Baseball players, you know what they do during the offseason?
Off days, yeah.
They play golf. Basketball players. Michael Jordan?
Wants to take your money as best he can on the golf course.
So much so, it was part of damn Space Jam. Think about it, peeps. It's golf. And it's not close. And a lot of you listening to me probably feel the same way. Are you a guy that goes out there with your group of friends, hits the course on a Sunday? It's crazy. It's crazy. And you know what I've accepted, Oren, at some point?
What's that?
I'm going to have to golf because I don't right now.
This climate lends itself to being a
golf-friendly.
Very golf. Yeah. 300 days out the year is great golf weather here in the South.
Now, ironically, through East Lake, through other, through the brown grass that Squid does, I've gotten access to some really nice golf courses.
Absolutely.
And specialty inside access. And I'm like, man, I know people that would salivate over this. But yeah, I've never played golf. I just have to do it.
My mom, it was a free program when I was, I think, 12, where you got Saturday morning. It was 5 free golf lessons on Saturday morning. And they did it for just did it for kids through the Atlanta Public School System. And I did not like it, one, because it was during the fall in the morning, so it wouldn't be the best weather. And two, I didn't want to get up at 7 o'clock and drive halfway across town to go to a golf course and hit a golf ball around. Didn't want to do that.
I don't blame you. I wouldn't
at
have
12,
either.
I wasn't ready for that.
I don't blame you. Honestly, I don't really want to do it now. If I'm being completely honest, I still don't have the bug. Maybe that's because I haven't done it. But yeah, it's never appealed to me. I'd rather go and throw a baseball around, throw a football around, shoot hoops. Like, there's just so many things I'd rather do before
now with
going to a golf course.
Probably more so than any other sport that's played, the social aspect of it on a casual level.
Or the business aspect of it.
Or the business aspect of it, yeah. Just, it's so much more conversational and interactive with other people than probably any other sport. It may, yeah, just, there's not very many sports where you just have time in between to just chat. Not a lot.
Yeah. And depending on how slow you're moving, could be 3-4 hours sometimes before you complete a round. All right, with that said, let's get to some dog talk. Connor Riley, it is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 10. That just came on my mind because I saw on the schedule, East Lake is this week. And I was like,
what's going on with Scotty Scheffler?
Do you know where that's from?
You told me where it was from.
Because Carl does it, and I don't think he knows where it's from. It's from this guy who does a show in Memphis.
Formerly of The Ringer.
And he does every single year, he does his
rap.
Funny Masters updates. And what's going on with Scotty Scheffler is a staple of that. And his name is Chris Vernon, and he has all of his producers dress up in these ornate animal costumes.
Look, Chris is a huge, huge NBA and college basketball guy.
Yeah. And every year, he just whips out this Masters update, and it's hysterical. And it gets millions of views, and it's one of the best things on the internet. And what's going on with Scottie Scheffler is a refrain that they use all the time because he's the best player in the world. And Carl's kind of took it.
He's co-opted it.
And I don't know if he knows where it's from. I question it. All right. Anyway, that aside, let's hear from Connor Riley. The first thing he was asked by Carl and Mike was, how did that scrimmage go?
Well, there's a glass half full version to a scrimmage, and then there's the glass half negative, which, you know, just always sort of seems to happen when you're going good on good. The positive is that the offensive line seems to have had a really good camp. They've avoided injuries so far for the most part. You've seen some positive steps. I don't know that there's been another player that has been practicing with Georgia that has had a better set of practices than freshman Juan Gaston. This was a guy who was a late riser in the recruiting process and made a big jump up with a 5-star per 247. And he looks to be at the very least a contributor and potentially a starter at the right guard spot. And now I know that might give some people some pause. Andrew Thomas was a freshman starting right tackle on the 2017 Georgia team that went to the national title. And I think if that offensive line is healthy, I believe enough in the talent to where they're going to be able to do the things they need to do, i.e. run the football well enough, to where the offense, at least in the same vein, was not the concern that it was a season ago. Conversely, defensive line was the question that I had the biggest, or the position I had the most questions about going into fall camp. And I think after these last 2 weeks, that question not only has persisted, but maybe even gotten bigger. Yes, you know what you have in Christian Miller. You know what you have in Xavier McLeod. And the freshmen, Elijah Griffin and J.J. Hanna, have had some nice moments. But it's like that next wave of like Joseph Jonah Janye, Nazir Johnson, Eke Aboko. Those guys, I just have not necessarily had the camp that you would want them to have. And while the offensive line had a great camp, it does not sound like the defensive line has been as bright as it could have been, and much less to the championship standards that the 2021 and 2022 teams were.
I read your article about Jonel Aguero, who's always shown signs, but as you said, he just can't stay healthy. Is he going to stay healthy and help to solidify that secondary?
That's the big thing, and he knows what he has to do to get on the field. He's a veteran in that secondary, by all accounts, and it seems like we say this every August, as I mentioned in the article. He's had a really good fall camp. He is going to be Georgia's game one starter at the star position. I expect him to continue to do that against Tennessee. But he's a guy who he missed time last year with multiple injuries. He had a leg injury. He had a hand injury as well. And so, you know, he's a guy where you got some questions in that secondary where you bring in three players via the transfer portal. And at a place like Georgia where they don't lean on the transfer portal that much, you know they're only doing that if they expect those guys can come in and play right away. Well, one of those guys might be competing for Janelle Aguero's spot. This Georgia staff has always really liked what Janelle Aguero can bring, and to this point in his career has kind of followed Tyke Smith a little bit, where Smith, yes, he transferred in from West Virginia, came in with a ton of hype, battled injury and ineffective play his early years on campus, but at third year in the system, he really blossomed at that star position, went on to be a third-round pick by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And this Georgia staff hopes that Janelle Aguero can do something similar in 2025 for them.
What about Juan Gaston? What's the deal there with the O-line?
He is a guy, Juan Gaston, who you just, they're all, you know, all these offensive linemen are big and massive, but he is 6'7", came in at around 380 pounds. Like, wow. They just are not humans that big. Obviously, when you're that big, you have to reshape your body. And in some ways, he's done that. Kirby Smart said last week he'd lost about 25 to 30 pounds already. But he's still got a ways to go to be a guy that is going to be able to go out there and play every single snap, much less doing so at a high SEC level. So he's a guy that I do think, even though he's a freshman, can come in and contribute right away. But Georgia's going to want to be deep at that position, especially because you saw a year ago how injuries happen on the offensive line. They're still going to rotate between Michael Inouye, Daniel Calhoun, and Juan Gaston. But Gaston, a true freshman from Atlanta, Westlake High School, has absolutely made himself a force to be reckoned with on that Georgia offensive line, and that's a huge boon for that position group.
Connor Riley, guys, with us from Dog Nation, and his Dog Nation reported from the second scrimmage. More emphasis on the run game, and then will that carry through to the season? Because, you know, we always argue about Bobo, but you kind of touched on some of the issues on offensive line. Will this team be able to play that kind of balanced power football?
And that's something they absolutely want to get back to, where I think in 2023, when they averaged 40 points a game and Carson Beck was the starting quarterback, they ran for 191 yards a game. They were second in the conference. Last year, they were 15th in the conference, rushing for 124 yards a game. And I know that, you know, 70 yards, it's hard to conceptualize that, but they put so much more on the shoulders of their quarterback last year than, frankly, they ever should have. And obviously that impacted Carson Beck with the way he went out there and played and the turnover mistakes that he seemed to make. Kirby Smart has said time and time again this fall, they can't put that much on Gunnar Stockton's shoulders, especially as a first-time starting quarterback. They've got to find a way to find themselves in fewer third and sevens like they were last year and more third and threes, third and shorts, third and manageables, where you're able to have your entire playbook at your disposal. And that's somewhere, too, where Gunnar Stockton, his maneuverability, I think, is really going to help in that regard. So they've put all the emphasis in the world on that. It sounds like the offensive line has had a good camp. They've got a couple of capable running backs and guys who can do things. But I think if you're a Georgia fan, you're more than fair to be skeptical of what this offense is going to look like until you see it. And not just against Marshall or Austin Peay, but on the road at Tennessee, who had a very good defensive season ago, at home against Alabama. That's really when I think we're going to learn about what this offense is and what they're ultimately capable of this season.
Connor Riley joining us, talking all things Dogs as they get ready for the start of the season. Questions about the D-line? How did they fare? What was the word there?
Yeah, it's a group where you're waiting for some guys to it sort of click. You know, like, yes, Christian Miller, second-team All-American, you're not going to have to worry about him. Xavier McLeod, yes, he's a guy that's going to play a whole lot. And look, part of this is the standard for Georgia on the defensive line is so incredibly high with what they had in 2021 and even 2022 when Jalen Carter was around. Georgia just right now, it does not seem to be there. Now, can they get there? Yes, they've got the bodies to do so. They've recruited that position very well, and Trey Scott has shown that he can develop defensive linemen in his time here at the University of Georgia. But right now, I don't believe this is a championship-caliber defensive line. Mm-hmm. And now they've got time to get there, obviously. But as we start the season in 2 weeks, this is the group where Georgia's going to have to make the biggest leap from where they are right now to the end of the season. I know there's a ton of talk nationally about Gunnar Stockton and what he's going to bring and what's going to, you know, be on his shoulders. Whether Georgia wins a national championship or not, in my mind, this year, it comes down to just how great, not just good, but great can this defensive line be.
It is our man Connor Riley from Dog Nation. The reports out of the scrimmage were that Gunnar Stockton solidifies the starting job. Was it that he was that much better? Puglisi wasn't that good? Bit of both?
I think it was just Gunnar very in control when he got his reps there in the scrimmage. It's been nothing against Ryan Puglisi. I think he's continued to have a good August camp, whatever you want to call it, set of practices. I think those first two games for Ryan are going to be really, really big because you hope that Georgia gets up big and he's able to get some game rest. Because for as much as Georgia likes Ryan Puglisi and what they think he can ultimately develop into, he's still never thrown a pass in a collegiate game. And I know Gunner didn't necessarily look great last year against Texas and Notre Dame. Those are two of the four best teams in the country based on the way the playoff played out last season. So I think with Gunner, he's in control. It's the benefit of, and yes, he hasn't played a ton at this point, but he's been in the system for 4 years. He's known Mike Bobo much longer than that. They love what he brings to the table from an intangible point of view. And Gunner, those first two games, I expect him to go out there. You know, he's probably not going to light the world on fire statistically. But Georgia, when they go to Rocky Top on September 13th, I think they're very confident and very comfortable with what Gunner Stockton can do in this offense.
Are you telling me that things are going to start off slow here for the O? Is that what you're telling me?
I don't think they're going to come out guns blazing. You know, I don't expect, 400 yards passing and 200 yards rushing in those games against Marshall and Austin Peay. Now, Marshall is going to be very bad this year. A lot of their team up and left to follow Charles Huff to Southern Miss. But I think for how good this offense is going to be and what it ultimately can be in 2025, we're waiting until that Tennessee game. And that is just maybe more of a personal thing in terms of knowing this program, knowing, they're not going to try and do anything big or reinvent the wheel in those first two games where they don't necessarily have to. But once we get into SEC play, that's where you need to see this Georgia offense come to life. And look, slow starts were an issue for Georgia last year. Mike Bobo spoke about it when we got to talk to him in August. It's not necessarily that they're going to play poorly or I foresee that. I just don't expect them to go out there, go tempo, try and score a gazillion points. I think they're going to do ball control and sort of go out there and win the way that Georgia comfortably knows how to do.
So when do we get the big breakout performance from the transfer wide receivers? That comes in the heart of SEC play?
I think that's ultimately what you're going to see. Now, they might make a play or two in those early games. I know they love what Zachariah Branch has brought to the table. Noah Thomas early on was really turning heads in terms of what he was able to bring from the outside. But in terms of making, a noticeable impact, because I don't think there's a Georgia fan out there that is going to have big takeaways from games against Marshall and Austin Peay in terms of what can be accomplished this season. That Tennessee game, and look, Tennessee has a lot of questions about them. I know they named Joey Aguilar their starting quarterback this weekend. Their best defensive player, Jamon McCoy, coming back from an ACL injury he suffered in January. If Georgia's able to go out there and take care of business, like they almost always have in Knoxville, I think that's going to be huge for what this team can do, especially just because, as Kirby Smart has said so often, it's a really young team. And so to get that kind of confidence boost on the road early in the season, I think is what this team is ultimately going to need. And that's why that Tennessee game, even though it's week three and that's over a month from now, that's the game where I think we'll really start to see what this Georgia team can ultimately be in 2025.
Great stuff, Connor. Tell the people where they can find your stuff.
Yep. You can follow me on Twitter at @KConnorRiley. This is the last weekend without Georgia football for a while. We're super excited that we finally made it through this offseason.
All right, man. We'll talk to you next week. Good job.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
That is our good buddy from Dog Nation, Connor Riley. They're giving the lowdown on the latest with the Dogs. When we get back, let's get the lowdown and the latest on the Braves, who are currently playing the, man, are they bad, 44-80 Chicago White Sox right now at Truist Park. Man, what a barn burner there. Oh, my goodness. But they've won 7 of 8. How did they do it? We'll talk to Danny Vietti, CBS Sports Believe Network, about that next. It's Chris Thomas Tonight. 7 of 8? What? Where did this come from? Okay. I mean, where was this around, I don't know, the trading deadline?
At any point during the season,
thank
except
you.
That one time when they hit 500 and then they never hit it again?
No. As a matter of fact, that's when it all cratered and crashed down. What is going on with the Braves? 12 games under 500? I know, it's still bad, but 7 of 8? Who thought? Let's head out to the Wade4.com hotline on Chris Thomas Tonight. Welcome in our buddy Danny Vietti, CBS Sports and the Believe Network MLB analyst. Danny, let's start here in our backyard. Are you surprised to see, based on all the conversations we've had this season, the Braves do what they've done the last couple of weeks?
Not really. I mean, the talent's always been there. It's never been a question of talent. It's just been a matter of fact that they just haven't gotten it done with situational baseball this year. They haven't played good, clean baseball. They haven't stayed healthy. They haven't hit with runners in scoring position. I've use the same term with the Braves this year, and that's Murphy's Law. Whatever can happen will happen, for better or for worse. So it was never a question of talent for the Braves. This lineup is stacked, when healthy, of course. This rotation was stacked before all the injuries started piling up. The bullpen kind of had question marks coming into the season and has had question marks throughout the season. But roster as a whole is never a question of talent. It was only a matter of time before, especially 162-game season, something was going to go right for the Braves. So a little too little too late probably at this juncture. But at least you like to see a little bit of fight from the Braves, who inevitably probably their season is likely over.
What do you make of a player like Michael Harris, who over the last couple of weeks, again, has showcased his vast talent with an OPS over 1,000, making great plays in the outfield? He raised his batting average nearly 50 points in a calendar month. Why can't he do this consistently, Danny?
Yeah, I mean, injuries certainly had a crucial role in this as well. I mean, a guy that started the season injured, last season dealt with injuries. I mean, he's dealt with injuries a lot of his career, albeit a short career thus far. I just think it's important for the Braves in particular, including Harris, to just get some sort of momentum heading towards next season, because you never want to have a lost season. I know fans right now especially are thinking it is a lost season. Any time that the Braves don't make the playoffs, when they are seemingly in a championship window, you tend to use those terms of lost season. But you want your hitters having some momentum going into next year. Hopefully Matt Olson can kind of carry some consistency into next season. Hopefully Baldwin can carry this momentum that he's built himself this season. Likewise, Michael Harris, he's on pace over this last month to have an OPS up over 900 over the last 30 games. His power numbers are coming alive. He's showing off the speed and athleticism that we've all come to love. Defensively, he's been putting on highlight reels out there in center field lately. So another guy that is immensely talented, another guy on the Braves that has dealt with injuries. But again, you don't want it to be a lost season. Hopefully Michael Harris, along with some other Braves players, can create some momentum heading into next season so that hopefully they can come into 26 healthy and feeling confident at the dish.
Couple of pitching questions here, one good, one bad. We'll start with the good. Have you liked what you've seen from the young guy, Hurston Waldrop? He was a high draft pick of the Braves, got a little cup of coffee last season, but really struggled. But now in his couple opportunities this year, has really made a name for himself in a rotation that desperately needs it.
Yeah, here's the thing with Atlanta is I never question whether they're going to be able to corral enough starting pitchers to get quality starts. I mean, the Braves were able to make Bryce Elder into an all-star 2 years ago. They were able to put together a pitching rotation to start this season with half of them on the injured list. They came into the season without Strider, without Ronaldo Lopez. I mean, they were limping into the season. And they were able to get some of these guys back into the fold, and unfortunately, Schwellenbach back on the IL, Chris Sale on the IL. But overall, the Braves have actually done a decent job starting pitching-wise, especially considering how many guys they have on this injured list to keep them in ballgames and potentially give them a chance to win ballgames. I don't think too many people would have looked at this rotation as is with Strider, Elder, Waldrop, Fetty, and Wentz. That's not exactly a winning formula starting pitching-wise. But Atlanta, all things considered, again, they've given themselves at least chances to win ballgames. And that's with half of their rotation, if not more, on the injured list. So, again, kind of going back to what I said earlier with Michael Harris, hopefully Waldrop is giving the team a little bit of momentum going into next season. 17 innings pitched this year, 1.02 ERA, 17 strikeouts across those 17 innings pitched. So it's a small sample size, but, again, you don't want to use that same terminology of lost season. Hopefully Waldrop, Harris, a lot of these Braves young guys can kind of get some momentum heading into next year.
Speaking of the flip side now, Spencer Strider, not good again tonight through three innings pitched. Danny, in his last three starts, including the three innings tonight, he's given up 26 hits over those three starts. That is unheard of for a guy with Spencer Strider's potential and talent. We know he is dealing with his second major arm surgery, but what do you make of his struggles?
I mean, there's a critical factor here, and that's that some guys coming off the injured list, for whatever reason, are able to get back to their A games immediately. And then there are other players that might take a year to kind of get back into the fold, try and get their mechanics back. And I think Strider, who, yes, sports a 98-plus-mile-an-hour fastball, usually when he's at his best, of course, but he's also a guy that really prides himself on his mechanics, kind of similar to Jacob DeGrom. DeGrom has dealt with injuries throughout his career, and when he has come back from his arm injuries, including a year ago, by the way, and he struggled getting back into the thick things. Strider and DeGrom, if you go side by side with them mechanically, very similar pitching mechanics and very similar arsenals too. Very similar pitchers, both right-handed, dominant, high-velocity pitchers. But both guys have dealt with injuries in their career. And so certain guys have been able to come back from their Tommy John or whatever UCL injuries that they've dealt with. And some guys are able to just get right back into it and they don't miss a beat. But it also creates a bar that is really not fair to the guys that aren't able to not miss or aren't able to get back to that level. It's totally understandable that Strider, who missed so much time and a guy that has dealt with injuries this season, again, after coming off of the arm injury, he just hasn't been able to find that consistency mechanic-wise. You look at his Savant numbers, he's given up hard-hit balls a lot more than he was in previous years as well. That, to me, tells me that his location isn't quite there. And anytime your location, isn't as consistent, typically that has to do with mechanics and confidence as well. So I think it has to do more with reps, consistency, mechanics, and that's something that he will be able to hopefully focus on in the offseason. And offseason, a year ago where he was probably spent more time doing rehab, this offseason, hopefully he can spend more time getting his consistency back as a mechanical, from a mechanical focal point.
If you're double A this offseason, which camp do you stand in? Try to move Murphy and restock what is a very desperate farm system and maybe a major league piece, or do you keep what is now one of the better catching tandems in MLB with Murphy and Baldwin?
It's a great question. You could go a number of different ways here. I've compared the Atlanta Braves to the 2023 San Diego Padres a number of different times this year. And what the Padres did is they didn't rebuild, they retooled. And they, I say not rebuild, but they also did get rid of a guy named Juan Soto and traded him to New York. But they were also able to turn Juan Soto into two crucial starting pitchers for them, including Michael King, who was phenomenal come playoff time. And he was probably the X factor in getting San Diego back to the postseason and is another critical factor here in 2025 as well. So, look, the Braves are not – they don't have necessarily a Juan Soto to trade, or at least I hope they don't, because they have Acuna and these guys under contract for a while longer. But if they do decide to trade – Sean Murphy, I just hope that it's a retooling, not a rebuilding, because this team still, like I just mentioned at the top of this conversation, immense talent, immense potential. I mean, you take the guys off the injured list, you have a rotation of Strider, and you include Waldrop and Elder if you want to, but you also have your Reynaldo Lopez, your Chris Sale, your Schwellenbach, your Smith Shavers. Like, that's a legit contending pitching rotation. You look at the lineup wise, when healthy, you got Acuna, you got Profar, Olsen, Baldwin, Ozuna, Harris. I mean, this is a stacked lineup. I think if anything, if you are deciding to trade Sean Murphy, you hope to try and get some bullpen arms to complement your closer, if that is Raisel Iglesias going into next season. So it's not a Juan Soto asset that the Padres had after 2023. But if they do decide to trade Sean Murphy, albeit limited options, probably bullpen is what you look at most that needs most improvement.
A couple of notes from around the league. How big of a gut punch is the Wheeler surgery for the Phillies?
It absolutely stinks in every regard. This was my worry with Philadelphia coming into the season, is championship windows are not locked. That window is a lot smaller than a lot of people think. And the Phillies have made deep playoff runs each of the last three seasons. And this is an aging roster. Harper's not getting any younger at 32 years old, about to turn 33. Kyle Schwarber, likewise. Trey Turner. These guys are at the back end of their primes, each of them 32 years old. JT Realmuto, 34 years old. Similarly, at their pitching rotation, with the exception of Christopher Sanchez, Aaron Nola, 32 years old. Zach Wheeler, 35 years old. Philadelphia, not necessarily an older roster, but a roster that has accrued a lot of innings, played a lot of postseason innings, and that tends to take a toll on your body over long spans. In Philadelphia, a lot of these guys, this roster has stayed the same each of the last three seasons for the most part. They haven't gotten a whole lot younger. And my worry with Philadelphia is that they haven't been able to hoist that World Series trophy quite yet. And yet they were aging faster and faster and faster, and you were hoping that they would stay healthy for just one more year. But unfortunately, I worry that Zach Wheeler, 35 years old, a lot of these other guys coming up in their mid-30s, I hope this isn't a sign of things to come, and I hope that their championship window can stay open just a bit longer, because I would love to see Bryce Harper hoist that first trophy. I would love to see Schwarber raise it again and Real Muto hoist it for the first time in his career. There's a lot of likable guys on that roster, and I just hope that this isn't a sign of things to come, because I hope that championship window can stay open just a bit longer.
What's going on with Kyle Tucker in Chicago?
He's batting about 130 since the beginning of July. The Cubs offense as a whole, though, has really struggled since the break. And I think that has something to do with it as well. I mean, hitting is contagious, right? And Chicago coming into the All-Star break were the best offense in not just the National League, but across Major League Baseball. Pete Crow Armstrong, MVP candidate. Kyle Tucker was looking like an MVP candidate through the first 2.5 months of the season. Say Suzuki robbed of an All-Star spot, but he was looking like an All-Star this year. This offense was clicking on all cylinders. All of a sudden, All-Star break comes, and all of them are hitting the slides. Tucker, Suzuki, PCA, Ian Happ, these guys are struggling mightily. And that's all while the Milwaukee Brewers seemingly can't lose a ball game right now. So right now, vibes are not high in Chicago. I still think this offense has the potential to get clicking once again, but the consistency hasn't been there since the All-Star break. And I don't have an answer for you when it comes to Kyle Tucker, because this is a guy that has been a model of consistency, albeit has dealt with injuries, but has been a model of consistency since he's been healthy, since coming up through the Astros organization. This is a guy that's going to hit free agency at year's end, so he has as much incentive now as ever to get back into things and get back to being that consistent player, because the more and more he struggles, the more and more money he's going to lose in the offseason during free agency.
Before I let you go real quick, I've asked you this before. I'm going to ask you again. Heat check on the Brewers, legit contenders?
It's hard to say no. I'm not going to die on that hill. They are the best team in baseball. They have the best record in baseball. But if you look statistically, they don't, on paper, they don't look like the best team in baseball. What they do so well is they don't make mistakes. They play really clean baseball defensively. Their pitching staff, I will say, is World Series contending potential. Like Freddie Peralta is a true ace. Brandon Woodruff, since coming off the injured list, has looked like the vet that they absolutely need. Mizrowski is dominant, or at least he was before he got injured. He's got dominant stuff, and albeit doesn't pitch deep into ball games yet, but dominant stuff. Quinn Priester's 12-3 this year with a 3.5 ERA. And they got him for a box of chocolates, essentially, during the offseason. So their rotation is stout. Their bullpen is also great, headlined by Miguel, who was an all-star this year. Koenig has been fantastic. Uribe, fantastic. Electric stuff in the bullpen. Offensively, that's where my questions arise. Is they have decent players, and Contreras and Yelich and Vaughn's been on fire lately. But 1-9, you look at their OPS, you look at their slugging percentages, they don't blow you away. So I think pitching-wise, yes, they give them a chance to win a World Series this year. I wonder if their offense is going to be enough to combat, say, the Dodgers, the Padres, or even the Phillies come postseason time.
Danny, appreciate the time. As always, we'll be checking you out, CBS Sports and the Believe Network. We'll chat soon.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
All right, Danny Vietti there. Make sure you check out his stuff. Oren, when we get back, we need to have a conversation. What in the world is happening with Spencer Strider right now? It is unbelievable. Dude's given up 30 hits in his last three starts. How is that mathematically possible? We'll talk about it next. Oren, we need to have a little chat here. Got a little short segment, and we're going to devote it to discussing the following topic. What in the world is going on with Spencer Strider right now? Oh my goodness. He follows up his worst start ever with his worst start ever.
We had three innings tonight, man.
Three innings, 10 hits, 7 earned runs, a walk, and 2 strikeouts, 68 pitches. His ERA is ballooned up to 5.25.
I don't know if he's working some stuff out right now, but whatever he's doing, he needs to do the opposite of this, because this is not sustainable to be a major league pitcher, a major league starter.
Over his last 3 starts, 20 earned runs and 30 hits over his last 3 starts. What in the world is going on with Spencer Strider? Now, Oren, the next question is going to be, what is the best thing for him for the rest of the year? Shut it down? Throw on the side? You got to question health, right? I mean, nothing's been reported, but
you can't.
At this point, be this bad. It's unbelievable.
He's bad right now, but it's going to sound. Who else? They don't have arms, so it's almost like you have to throw him now. Sense of necessity, right?
I mean, I would just whoever, like, what's the kid's name? Richie,
like J.R. Richie.
Yeah, they got a couple of kids in the minors. I mean, but how can you, how much longer are you willing to let this happen? Like, in terms of preserving him for the future? I mean, this is like mind. And for the reason I say this so specifically too, he's a very mental guy. Like, he's all about thinking and strategy. And we know this about him. He's an overthinker. He admits to it, and he takes his craft very seriously. Again, guys, 20 earned runs and 30 hits allowed in his last 3 starts. That's almost, like, literally almost unbelievable if I told you that. So, Oren, the question is, I think they have 3 options. Shut him down. Move him to the bullpen, or let it ride, partner. You know what? Let's take some calls. If you have a second, I got about 8-9 minutes. If we stretch it,
we got a minute here. We got a few minutes.
So let's talk, Braves fans. If you're watching this PAP right now, because you're down 7-0 now to the White Sox in the bottom of the 4th. This is how you respond after winning 7 of 8 games and Spencer Strider is imploding in front of our eyes? Braves country, what do we do with this dude? What? You're Brian Snicker, listeners out there, you're AA. What do you do? I think there are 3 options. You shut him down. We can't do this. You move him to the bullpen and reduce his workload so he can focus on his mechanics and focus on his stuff. Or you let it run and just let him do whatever this is. He's going to be, Oren, after this start tonight, he's going to be 5-11 with a 5.25 ERA and a whip of about 150. I mean, that's non-major league acceptable stats. If a pitcher finishes that season and he's not somebody with the youth and the hope of a Spencer Strider, you're not back the next year. Like, that is, see ya. I don't have time for your shenanigans. Braves fans, what do we do with Spencer Strider? I don't know. I guess I would move him to the bullpen, because I suggested that before and y'all laughed at me. Well, where are we now? Still don't have a closer to speak of. Let him try it. Could it be Oren, let me ask you this. Could it possibly be worse than this? No. No, it couldn't, right?
So, because I'm just looking at this tonight. He hit 97 on the gun 3 times. That was the fastest he's thrown something tonight. But he's living in the mid-80s with that slider and change up, and yeah, just I don't know what to make of it tonight, man. I really don't know what to make of it.
I hate to say this, would you be shocked if you heard something after the game? I mean, the last three starts have been abysmal, abominable. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if we hear news after the game that something's going on. I mean, clearly something's not right. I don't know if it's mental and physical, just mental, just physical. I don't know. We don't know. But to give up 20 earned runs in your last three starts and 30 hits, unbelievable.
So for Mark Bowman and from Dave O'Brien, his average velocity was over his season average tonight. So his average velocity tonight was over his season average. And for the nerds who don't like the advanced metrics, I guess, or the folks who don't like the advanced metrics, he got a whiff on 13 of 68 pitches, and that was the third highest percentage of whiffs he's got this year, 19%. Neither of the homers tonight allowed was versus a center cut pitch. So take that for what it's worth.
Nothing?
Nothing at all. So I mean, guess
not literally, what are you reaching for there?
Guys are hitting things. The pitch is out of the zone for he's throwing
okay,
right
but
now.
To the
or
tune
just,
of 20
great.
Earned runs and 30 hits in your last three appearances?
I don't know, man.
Which have and by the way, Orin, those appearances have totaled, do you know how many innings? Over three starts. 11. 4, 4, and 3. 11 innings. 30 hits. 20 earned runs. I don't give a whatever those stats you read just said. You can cover that in all the butter and sugar you want. I don't care. Again, let me just repeat this one more time for the people in the back. Spencer Strider's last three outings, 11 innings pitched, 30 hits allowed, 20 earned runs. Don't tell me something's not wrong. Something's very, very wrong. I don't know what it is. Again, I don't know if it's mental. I don't know if it's physical. And I don't know if it's a combination of the two. But something, 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 something is not right with Spencer Strider. 404-726-0929. I don't know, man. But don't try to put lipstick on a pig here and tell me that something's not okay. I don't know, man. 404-726-0929, 404-726-0929. Sheesh. Man. All right.
You don't sound upset right now or disappointed. Like, you just sound kind of – you sound, well, confused, one, because of how bad it's been the last few starts for Spencer. But also, I'm sensing a little bit of – I don't want to call it hurt, Chris, but maybe just – well, no, you know, we'll just call it disappointment. Disappointment at what Spencer
Strider
has become.
Yeah, I mean, look, especially because of the way the team was just playing, right? They just went, you know, 7 of their last 8. And now you get this against the Chicago White Sox at home, where Spencer Strider can't make it out of the third inning. I mean, what are we doing? This is awful. Absolutely awful. You know who else is awful, Orin? Atlanta United. Another loss this weekend. They had a couple of matches where they looked like they were going to turn it around, but they did not. Another bad loss. We'll talk to Jason Longshore when we get back to kick off the 9 o'clock hour. Man, you win 7 of 8 in this. This is what you give us coming home against the Chicago White Sox, who are 44-80. And Spencer Strider has completely fallen off a cliff. Wow. 404-726-0929, 9 o'clock hour, next.